Good morning. Stand by me, Mom. My mom gave birth to me at age 16. My dad worked hard so she could finish high school and supported her goals to get her BS and master's degree in education. Mom was an exceptional educator. She was chosen to be the one to integrate the teaching staff at a Suffolk Elementary School, and she excelled there. Her career advanced to several positions in the Suffolk school system, reading specialist, elementary school principal that I attended, and administrator in the office of the superintendent. I'm sharing Mom's accomplishment because this very organized, outstanding educator is now being diagnosed with Alzheimer's. She is experiencing mental decline that shows up as extreme forgetfulness, confusion, agitation, irritability, fearfulness, and vulnerability. She responds to telephone scammers that have led to the loss of significant savings. I am now monitoring her phone calls, which angers her, but it needs to be done. Last summer, Mama was driving home, became disoriented, and crashed in a ditch somewhere in North Carolina. Fortunately, she was not injured, but she was charged with reckless driving and had to appear in court, and I went there with her. The court legally prohibited her from driving anymore. I am a retired professional firefighter. My 30 years as a firefighter have prepared me to help others in times of distress and need. And as a firefighter, I have had a second thought when I had to run into a burning building or perform first aid on a seriously injured person. There are no second thoughts then about standing by Mom in her time of need. She wants to stay in her home, and my brother and I intend to do our best to make that happen for her. Every other week, I live with my mom. I help supervise her medications, assist her with household chores, coordinate her meals, chauffeur her to necessary medical and other appointments, and when she insists, I show for her to Walmart and McDonald's once a week. When Mom becomes agitated because she has misplaced something, which happens often, I help calm her by searching with her in every conceivable spot until we find the missing item. I do this not just to calm her, but to show her how much she is loved and needed. This is my mom, and I will always stand by her. Thank you.
Some of you may or may not know my wife's horrific motorcycle accident 2 years ago. From April 24th to May 30th, 36 straight days of driving to and from the hospital, mostly Norfolk General, trying to find free parking. That was my routine. I got pretty good at it, too. One of her surgeries late in May, the doctor said it should be pretty routine, 1 to 2 hours, maybe 3 to 4. 8.5 hours later, I was able to see Amber. I spent the first couple hours in the waiting room talking with some folks to kill time. I went outside to soak up the sun, work on my tan. I even took a nap on the park bench. I went back up to the waiting room thinking it would be over soon. The waiting room that was once full was now dwindling down. One by one, people were leaving. By late afternoon, no one was left in the waiting room. I started to freak out. No one was on the second floor. Even the receptionist had left for the day. The TV was on Dr. Phil or something like that, and they had a sign that said, "Please do not change the channel." I'm the only one there. Who's going to stop me? I switched it to a hockey game to get my to clear my mind and to stop from wandering off. I called my friend Teresa because she was the only person I knew in Norfolk and asked her if she could bring me something to eat. Paula called me and said, "How did the surgery go?" She's still in there. I needed Paula and Teresa to be there to help me so that I could have the strength and energy for Amber. It was the longest of Amber's 9 surgeries, and it went well. I was relieved every day that Amber was showing improvement from everyone's prayers and positive thoughts. Thank you, Teresa and Joe, for bringing me food to the hospital. Thank you, Paula and Richard, for support and food, and Richard for mowing my yard. Thank you, everyone who brought us meals and sent flowers and cards. I even asked Humphrey if he could bring a pizza to my son, Lee, who's home by himself. Last week, Jerry, Cleverkamp, he said, "I need to ask you something if it's okay." I'm like, "Yeah, what's up?" I thought I did something wrong. He pulled me aside and told me I was an inspiration. I said, "You know what this Sunday is all about?" This picture of us, Amber and I, we were pretending to break out of the hospital because it was our first time being outside to get the fresh air and feel the warm sun. This was the best day ever. Because I was thinking every day was going to be loading and unloading the wheelchair to get Amber to and from doctor appointments, church, and the store. I enjoy taking care of her. I stood by her. During this difficult time, my fear was fading as the days went by as she was getting better. I want to be there for her, my teammate, my best friend. I meant it when I said my vows over 29 years ago. So Amber, I'll be there for you because I love you. I want to take care of you. I take pleasure in helping you and being with you. And I love to make you laugh. As you can see, the yellow stethoscope, checking her out, checking on her. I asked Amber if these pictures were okay because she didn't look so well. And she said, "Yes, that's what it looks like when you get hit by a truck." Thank you.
My daughter Emily was in elementary school. Her best friend was a little boy named Sam, and I adored Sam. I still adore Sam. When he was a little boy, he reminded me of Charlie Brown. He had kind of a round face. It was a little pudgy and very introspective. Sam was also brilliant, a child prodigy, actually. And each school morning, he would come by our house to get Emily, and they would walk up the street to school together. A lot of sweet memories of that. Sam started getting teased in the second grade. Some of the other kids on the playground teased him because he was pudgy, and also because he preferred to play with Emily and her friends rather than the other boys on the playground. In particular, I remember what triggered a lot of the teasing was Sam liked hanging upside down on the horizontal bars with the girls. Well, when the teasing started, Emily was upset, but she knew what to do. She stood by Sam. She let it be known in her words and actions that Sam was her friend and the bullies would not win. And she helped Sam learn to ignore the taunts, and she supported him in continuing to do what he wanted to do and to be who he was. And I have to tell you that that was a proud mama moment for me, not only because Emily stood by her friend, but because she did it so naturally and immediately, like it was just the right thing to do. Wouldn't that be something if every time someone needed us to stand by them, that we just did it naturally because it was the right thing to do? You know, we are actually hardwired to care for other people, to care about other people. Scientists tell us that we are born compassionate. That's why we cry when we see other people cry, or we laugh when they laugh. It's why so many of us have teared up today. And when we saw the words on the cardboard signs and when we heard these incredibly moving stories about other people's hardships and challenges. And yet there's more to standing by someone than feeling compassion. To actually stand by someone requires action and often courage. It means we must be willing to extend ourselves. We must be willing to get outside of our comfort zone to help someone else. Recently, my biggest learning about standing by others has come in the area of racial justice. Over the past year, I have realized the extent of the white privilege that I have had my whole life and have completely taken for granted. I've come to see that life in America for people of color is very, very different, that is systemically unjust and oppressive. And I've realized that if things are ever going to change, we who are white must speak up and stand up for our black and brown brothers and sisters. We must stand by you. We must stand by you. Whatever that looks like, whether that is helping your voice be heard, giving you a platform, giving you an opportunity, believing in you, whether it's having a difficult conversation, facing our own fears of inadequacy and guilt, whether it means simply being brave enough to speak up when someone makes an offensive comment, to not be silent. This, to me, is what Stand By Me is really all about right now in our society and in our country, and I feel in our hearts. You know, I'm embarrassed to admit that until this last year, I didn't realize my help was needed. I really didn't. I thought a lot of this stuff we'd gotten behind us. And isn't that so often the case, that we don't realize our help is needed? We don't realize that we can make a difference, no matter what the issue. You know, today's service is testimony to the power that each of us has to lift each other up and change each other's lives. Have you seen this today? The metamorphosis, the transformation in people's lives and well-being because of the kindness and the goodness of others. And so you might ask yourself today, who needs me to stand by them? Or who do I need to stand by me? Be willing to ask for the help that you need, for the support that you need, and be willing to support others as much as you can. Because this is how we live into our full humanity. This is how we rise into that consciousness of love taught and epitomized by our way shower, Jesus, who above all said, love one another. And this is how, by standing by one another, this is how we make this adventure called life the very best it can be for all of us and each of us. Let's stand by each other. Let's stand for each other. And let's stand together. And with that, it is my great honor to now bring up Judy Namath to lead us in our meditation.
Thank you. Breathe with me. And I invite you to get comfortable. Close your eyes if that's comfortable. And let the love in this room just flow over you like warm honey. To quote Brené Brown, the spirit connection that flows through us and every human is something that cannot be broken. As we sit now in our spiritual community, go deep, deep in your heart. God waits for you. At the center of our being is the point of nothingness, untouched by ego, a point or spark which belongs entirely to God, inaccessible to the fantasies of our mind or the brutalities of our will. This little point of nothingness is the pure glory of God written in us. Like a pure diamond blazing with the invisible light of heaven. It is in everybody. Close your eyes and shift into contemplative prayer. Let all the pieces of who you think you are today drop away. Go deeper. Let go of what seems important to you. God waits in the silent space. He is present and active there. Go deeper. I set my intention to invite oneness, oneness with spirit, to be one with all people. In the quiet of love and compassion, I gently turn within my heart. Breathe. And repeat after me the words from Psalm 46. Be still and know that I am God. Together, know that I am God. Be still and know that I am. Be still and know that I am. Be still and know. Be still and know. Be still.
Be still.
Be in the silence.